Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Tuesday, September 24th. Joining us today are Eric and Kate. We're diving into a hot topic that's sure to stir up some debate.
Hey there, Ted. Glad to be here. This study's got me thinking about all those family dinners where kids just push their veggies around the plate.
Thanks for having us, Ted. I've got to say, I'm already raising an eyebrow at this research. Seems like it might be giving parents an easy out.
Today we're discussing a new study on picky eating habits in children. Eric, Kate, what are your initial thoughts on this research?
Well, this study from University College London is quite the eye-opener. It's suggesting that when little Timmy turns his nose up at broccoli, it might be more about his genes than mom and dad's cooking skills. It's like nature is playing a bigger role in the dinner table drama than we thought.
Hold your horses, Eric. I'm not buying it hook, line, and sinker.
I get where you're coming from, Kate, but let's look at the numbers. The researchers didn't just pull this out of thin air. They surveyed parents of 2,400 sets of twins. That's a lot of picky eaters. They found that genetic differences accounted for 60% of food fussiness at 16 months, and it jumped to over 74% between ages 3 and 13. That's a pretty hefty chunk of the pie chart, don't you think?
Numbers can be misleading, Eric. What about the remaining 26-40%? That's still a significant portion influenced by environmental factors.
You're right, Kate. We shouldn't ignore that. But think about it this way. If genetics are responsible for 3/4 of the fussiness, that's like 3 slices of a 4-slice pizza. It's a big deal.
Let's dig deeper into the methodology. How did the researchers determine the genetic influence?
Great question, Ted. They got clever with this one. They compared food fussiness similarity between fraternal twins, who share 50% of genes, and identical twins, who share 100%. It's like comparing apples and oranges, except the apples are genetically identical. What they found was that identical twins showed much more similarity in food fussiness. It's like they were reading from the same picky eater script.
That doesn't rule out parental influence entirely. Identical twins are often treated more similarly by parents than fraternal twins.
You've got a point there, Kate, but here's the kicker. The researchers specifically looked at the difference in similarity between the two types of twins to isolate the genetic factor. It's like they were playing detective, trying to catch genes red-handed in the act of making kids picky.
I still think we're overlooking the importance of parental responsibility in introducing diverse foods to children. It's not just about genes, it's about exposure and encouragement. Parents can't just throw up their hands and say, well, it's in their DNA.
What about the definition of food fussiness used in this study? How might that impact the results?
The study defined it as the tendency to eat a small range of foods due to pickiness and/or reluctance to try new foods. This broad definition covers various aspects of picky eating. It's like casting a wide net to catch all the finicky fish in the sea.
That definition seems too simplistic. It doesn't account for cultural differences in food preferences or availability of diverse foods in different households.
I hear you, Kate, but let's not forget the scale of this study. The large sample size of 2,400 twin pairs should help mitigate some of those variables. It's like having a massive food buffet. You're bound to cover a lot of ground.
But it doesn't eliminate them entirely, Eric. We can't ignore the role of culture and family dynamics in shaping eating habits. It's not just about genes. It's about the whole enchilada, pun intended.
Let's consider a historical perspective. Can you think of any similar studies or beliefs about picky eating in the past?
Absolutely, Ted. Let's take a trip back to the 1930s. There was this famous experiment by Dr. Clara Davis called the Baby Self-Selection Study. It was like a baby buffet bonanza. They gave infants a variety of whole foods and found that the little tykes naturally chose a balanced diet. It was revolutionary at the time.
That study has been widely criticized, Eric. It was conducted on a small sample size and under controlled conditions that don't reflect real-world situations.
Fair point, Kate. The study wasn't perfect, but it was groundbreaking for its time. It challenged the prevailing belief that children needed to be force-fed certain foods. It was like giving kids the keys to the kitchen kingdom. This sparked a shift towards trusting children's innate preferences.
But that approach can be dangerous. Left to their own devices, many children would choose unhealthy options like sugary snacks over nutritious foods. We can't just let kids run
wild. I get your concern, Kate, but think about it this way. Both studies suggest that children have innate tendencies in their eating habits. The new research takes it a step further by identifying a genetic component. It's like we're peeling back the layers of the onion, if kids would eat onions, that is.
I think that's a stretch, Eric. The Davis study was about food choices, not food fussiness. They're not directly comparable. We're talking
I see where you're coming from, Kate, but here's the thing. Both studies challenge the idea that parents are solely responsible for their children's eating habits. It's a significant shift in thinking, like going from clean your plate to trust your tummy.
That's a dangerous conclusion, Eric. It could lead parents to give up on encouraging healthy eating habits in their children. We can't just throw in the towel and blame it all on genes.
How might our understanding of picky eating and its causes have evolved since the 1930s?
Great question, Ted. We've come a long way since the days of eat your spinach because I said so. We've gained a much more nuanced understanding of the interplay between genetics and environment. This new study is part of that evolving knowledge. It's like we're adding new ingredients to the recipe of understanding child nutrition.
But we've also seen a rise in processed foods and marketing targeted at children, which has a huge impact on eating habits. We can't ignore those factors.
You're absolutely right about that, Kate. The food landscape has changed dramatically. But here's the fascinating part. This study suggests that even with those environmental factors, genetics play a significant role in food fussiness. It's like nature and nurture are having a tug of war over our dinner plates.
I still think we're putting too much emphasis on genetics and not enough on the role of parenting and society in shaping children's eating habits. We can't just blame it all on DNA and call it a day.
Looking to the future, how do you think this research might impact approaches to dealing with picky eating?
I believe it will lead to more personalized approaches, Ted. If we understand the genetic component, we can develop strategies tailored to each child's predispositions. It's like having a custom-made menu for every kid's genetic taste buds.
That sounds like an excuse for inaction. We should focus on proven methods like repeated exposure to new foods and modeling healthy eating habits. We can't just
throw up our hands and say, it's not an either-or situation. Understanding the genetic component doesn't mean we ignore environmental factors. It just helps us target our efforts more effectively. Think of it like having a map of the picky eating terrain. We can navigate it better.
But emphasizing genetics might make parents feel helpless. They might give up on trying to introduce new foods to their children. We can't have parents throwing in the kitchen towel.
What about potential long-term consequences of this research? How might it affect public health policies?
That's a great point to consider, Ted. This research could lead to early identification of children at risk for extreme food fussiness. It's like having a crystal ball for future food fights. We could potentially prevent conditions like avoidant restrictive food intake disorder with early interventions.
That sounds like over-medicalization of a normal childhood phase. We should focus on creating healthy food environments for all children, not labeling some as genetically predisposed to pickiness. We're talking about
I understand your concern, Kate, but early intervention could prevent serious health issues later in life. The study mentions that picky eaters who carry their habits into adulthood have worse cognitive function. It's like we're investing in their future brain power by addressing these issues early.
That's fear-mongering, Eric. Most children grow out of picky eating phases naturally, especially with supportive parenting. We don't need to turn this into some kind of genetic boogeyman.
How might this research influence the food industry and marketing towards children?
Interesting question, Ted. It could lead to more research into the genetic basis of food preferences, potentially influencing product development to appeal to different genetic predispositions. Imagine a world where we have genetically tailored baby food. It's like personalized meal kits for tiny taste buds.
That's a terrifying prospect. We should be encouraging diverse whole food diets, not catering to genetic pickiness. We can't just let food companies
exploit this. I see your point, Kate. But look at it this way. Understanding these predispositions could help develop strategies to overcome them, potentially expanding children's palates. It's like having a roadmap to broaden their culinary horizons.
Or it could be used to justify marketing even more processed, picky eater-friendly foods. We need to focus on education and exposure, not genetic excuses. Let's not give kids, or parents, an easy out when it comes to healthy eating.
Well, folks, it looks like we've stirred up quite the pot with this discussion. From genetic influences to parental responsibility, it's clear that picky eating is a complex issue with no easy answers. Thanks to Eric and Kate for bringing their insights to the table. Until next time, keep exploring those taste buds.